Thanks, guys, for tuning in. This is Josh from Beer Run. I'm here with
Jay.
Jay from Beer Run. We're going to discuss extreme beers today. This is a style, a broad style of beers, but lots of different things in this category. But Jay, what is an extreme beer?
Well, extreme beer. Well, the word extreme by definition is exceeds the ordinary, usual, or expected. And the extreme beer movement has been about how diverse and complex, versatile craft beer really can be. It's not just a lager or an ale. You can get into many different kinds of flavors and depths.
Now, is this the kind of beer that you you brew while you're on the back of a motorcycle doing a flip through the air or on a snowmobile? Or
well, that would be doubly extreme. But no, typically just in a standard environment using different kinds of ingredients.
Okay, so what really defines an extreme beer? I mean, I've had lots of different beers, I've drank everything from Natural Light to some kind of monster crazy West Coast IPA. What makes an beer extreme? Is a standard PBR? Would you call PBR an extreme beer?
Yeah, PBR or a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale from the ale side would be a standard kind of easy drinking kind of beer.
Right. Okay. So we're not talking about those. We're talking about something I guess there's some different classifications which really define what makes a beer extreme.
Yeah, and it's the term extreme beer is still kind of open-ended. Jim Cook of Boston Beer Company, Sam Adams, coined the term in 1994 when he was describing his Triple Bock, which at the time was a record 17.5% alcohol, was the most alcoholic beer made at that point. And at this point, it could be anything from barrel aging a beer, adding no hops at all, adding other things like lavender or heather. It could mean you're blending big beers together, all kinds of different things, sour beers. It's open-ended at this point.
Okay, so it seems to me like that you're doing something weird to the beer, basically, or you're kind of experimenting and doing something that might be described in 80s terms as radical or far out.
Exactly, and it just comes back to the definition where you're not doing the ordinary, you're not doing the usual treatment.
Okay, so you had mentioned that that the Sam Adams Triple Bock from 1994 came in at 17.5%. That seems like a wine alcohol by volume to me. That seems to be getting into like maybe even like strong wine territory. What is like a typical alcohol by volume for your standard beer?
Typical alcohol would be maybe it's a 4.2% Bud Light or a 4.7 PBR, or you might have a 4.8 Allagash White into your 5% Pale Ale, your 7% Bell's Two Hearted kind of IPA kind of beer.
Okay, so like your most styles come in at the high end, maybe around 7%.
Yeah, exactly.
So some of these extreme beers may be coming in at like three times the standard, or almost maybe not quite, but roughly somewhere around there. So that I guess that would be the extreme beers, the strong ones would be coming in somewhere like three times that.
Yeah.
What does, like, say, Guinness come in at?
Guinness comes in at 4.3% alcohol.
Okay, so that's pretty low.
Yep.
So Guinness is one of those beers that people seem to think is, you know, people that you know, we run into a lot of people who come in and say, oh, man, I can't handle Guinness. It's too much.
Yeah, and the funny thing is a pint of Guinness has about the same amount of calories as a Coors Light, Miller Lite, Bud Light, even though it has this reputation of being a much bigger kind of beer.
Do you think it's because it's a dark beer?
The dark beer does scare a lot of people.
Okay, so a beer can be totally dark but still pretty light and almost as light as a light beer or as light as a light beer.
Yep.
Wow, what do you know? that's cool. All right, but again, we digress, which we probably do a lot of. But so let's get back to extreme beer. I noticed you said something about barrel aging. So what exactly is barrel aging?
Barrel aging is something that harkens back to the old days of beer, where brewers used to age their beers in wood barrels, and then it kind of became a lost art where the modern, more efficient brewers use stainless steel. But now, this time around, they're using the brewers are using wood barrels that have previously seen bourbon, red wine, port, any number of other alcohols, and then they just repurpose them to age their own beers in.
Okay, so when these guys put these beers in these barrels, does there still any of the, like you said, you were talking about wine or whiskey or port, you know, port wine, is there any of that residual alcohol still in those barrels?
Exactly, and in the wood barrels, you might get a bourbon barrel which holds 55 gallons of bourbon, and when they drain it to fill their own bourbon bottles, they'll typically leave 1, 2, 3 gallons of that bourbon, and that's what would be called a wet barrel. So when a beer gets filled into that, you have 2 gallons of a bourbon, and then you add 53 gallons of beer, it's clearly going to go up in alcohol content.
And how does that make it taste? Does it make it taste good, or?
Oh, makes it taste good to me.
I'm kidding, of course. Yeah, that's really 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 good. We over at Beer Run, we have the Bourbon Barrel Stout typically on draft.
Yep.
And I know that's one of those beers that they brew a batch of stout, an imperial stout, I guess, and then they take part of it, barrel age it in bourbon barrels. And then blend it with another part of the same beer, the same stout, yeah. Which gives it a really smooth makes it a really really smooth stout that definitely has a good element of that a good hit of that bourbon in there, which is I think really adds a lot, and I guess you would kind of call that one an extreme beer. It's certainly not at the most extreme end. Of that, and there's certainly people that you know really take it a long way, but so that's barrel aging. you also talked a little bit about adding unusual ingredients to some of the beers.
Yeah, at this point, brewers are using ginger, they're using coffee beans, various fruits. Heather, lavender, various herbs to go
chili
along. Chili peppers. Ingredients that have been used for centuries now in beer making but have been lost with the more efficient, industrialized ways of the lager. And
right, that's some of the stuff that we touched on our previous podcast.
Where exactly.
With the big guys. The big guys aren't really using any of these unusual ingredients, right?
Yeah, they typically end up costing the brewer more money to go out and use these weirder ingredients. You're going to get a less consistent product if your ultimate goal is efficiency. So it's the craft brewer that doesn't care as much about making that same exact adjunct lager over and over and over and having a little variance in their beer.
Right. I mean, this guy's a real fringe guy, you know. I mean, why can't he just get in line, you know? I mean, what's can he just be an automaton and really just make the same beer over and over? I mean, what's this guy's deal?
Hicks.
Okay, one of the other things we were talking about was sour beers. Now, This in my experience, these sour beers, these are from the Flanders region of Belgium in origin. Is that right?
Yeah, there's one particular strain, Brussels Brettanomyces,
Is the yeast strain?
It's a yeast strain that gets shortened to Brett a lot of times due to its unwieldy name, but that's the one that's in vogue. It probably gets used the most by other brewers.
Right. And so this is what I know a little bit. I've been exposed a little bit to the wine aspect. My girlfriend does all the wine buying at Beer Run, and I know that from going to wine dinners and talking to wine people that this is a yeast strain that's often used in wine as well. And what they the predominant sort of tasting note that wine people tell you that this Brettanomyces yeast strain gives you in wine is what they call horse blanket.
Yep.
which sounds, you know, pretty it doesn't sound good, right?
Yeah, it doesn't exactly whet the appetite when you hear a horse blanket.
Right, yeah. But when you actually try it in wine and even beer, which it's sort of gotten into the vogue in beer as well, it actually does add, you know, a lot of complexity, and it's actually a really interesting flavor on the palate, you know, despite the name that it has. It adds sort of a level of complexity, but a lot of the sour beers, I think one of the other yeast strain that really adds a lot to that is the lactobacillus or bacillus microbe, which from what I understand comes from the barrels that these Belgian brewers in the Flanders region use. Is that correct?
Well, it's a bacteria microbe that can live in the wood, and then when they empty the barrels and they refill the barrels with new beer at that point to age, it seeps back out of the wood into the liquid and comes back to life.
So does this happen over, you know, overnight? I mean, you put this beer in these barrels, and that, it happens. Does it happen overnight, or
it's a much slower process? The brewers typically like to age for months at a time to get the full flavor, the full aspect of those various bacteria. A common example would be like a Flemish red or brown ale, where it's a blending of a new beer and an old beer, and they're taking advantage of 6-month-old ale and 18-month-old ale and getting the desired effect.
Right. And so these are the ones that are really the sour beers. And mm-hmm. and it sounds, again, it sounds terrible. Like you hear a sour beer, like why would I drink a sour beer?
Well, they can come across as very tart and very refreshing at the same time. It's a perfect spring summer kind of beer style. To be able to consume a 5.5% alcohol, whether it be a Flemish ale or a lambic, it makes you just want to keep drinking and drinking.
Right, and these are typically fairly low alcohol. Yep. Styles, right? So I mean, that's the thing. I remember when we opened Beer Run, and I got hooked on these sour beers because I was like, I was getting these like raisiny notes, but it was so like refreshing, and they're low alcohol beers. It's not like a mega, you know, as compared to some of these other extreme beers that, you know, really push the limits of ABV, mm-hmm. alcohol by volume or hoppiness. It's none of those. It's a really it's a really lighter drinking, refreshing beer that almost has a citrusy kind of note. I mean, I almost compare it to cider, but I mean, this was one of those beers that early on I got into them, and I made the mistake of recommending them to some people. Well, I started recommending them because I was really into them, and half the people I recommended them to just thought it was terrible. And then the other half were like, man, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those beers that really cuts it really divides, you know, as it can be divisive, but I think they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So I guess we've got a lot of material on this on this podcast on extreme beers, and it looks like we're hitting a magic point where we probably want to break off. But I guess we can do part two on the extreme beers
at a later date.
Yeah, we can probably revisit some of this extreme beer stuff here. So I'd like to thank everybody in the podcast sphere for tuning in. And really appreciate you guys tuning in. We will be back with more craft beer goodness for you guys. So signing off, I'm Josh.
I'm Jay.
And remember to drink a lot of beer.